If you want to be a leader and you really want to be ahead of the curve, you have to be thinking about, well, exactly what will society look like 10 years or 50 years from now?
Well, hey there, and welcome back into the Direct Selling Accelerator podcast. I'm your host, Sam Hind, and we are here to help support you in growing your direct selling business. One of the things I truly believe in is the ripple effect that you get to have just by showing up every day and doing what it is that you were put here to do. Most importantly, every person you come in contact with, when you show up in your business, you are having an impact on, as they are on the people they come in contact with. So today, it is my honor and privilege to introduce you to a very special individual that I know is going to help to grow you and your business through the wisdom that he imparts during this interview. Today, I get to introduce you to the amazing David Schmidt, the founder and CEO of LifeWave, one of the fastest growing direct selling companies globally. David comes to us with an experience in business and product development that spans over 30 years and starts with a dream as a child to be an inventor. Today, it's evolved to where he gets to be scientist and inventor behind his very own company. He comes with a passion for increasing not just lifespan, but the quality of life we live to the quality of the world in which we live in. David's research and inventions are bridging the gap between science and intuition, that which we already know innately within us to live the lives we were born to live. I was fascinated talking with David and hearing not just about the science behind the health that we have, but also how we can improve that using our intuition and the things we already know and already have within us. From the Bible and hidden codes within its words to AI and business growth strategies, we talked about it all in this interview. I know you're going to enjoy listening in, so grab yourself pen and paper because I guarantee you're going to need it today. Get yourself a cup of tea or coffee, sit back, relax, and enjoy listening in on this amazing interview. Hello, everyone, and welcome back into the Direct Selling Accelerator podcast. Today, I am so honored and privileged to be chatting away with David Schmidt, the founder and CEO of LifeWave. Welcome on in, David.
Thank you, Sam. Pleasure to be here.
I'm super excited for our chat today, David, and you honestly, we've already had a bit of a chat and you are, the best way I can describe this is such a clever cookie, but also you are so much fun to chat to because I feel like I'm constantly learning when I'm talking to you. So I'm really excited today because I get to learn, but also our amazing listeners get the chance to learn from you as well and glean from your amazing wisdom. But I'm really excited today to hear a little bit about LifeWave and the amazing journey that you've been on. Now, you're the founder of this incredible company that has been growing and going ahead in leaps and bounds. Do you want to tell us a little bit about, how LifeWave started?
Sure. I started LifeWave in 2002. And actually, the intent was never to be a direct selling company. I had just spent a number of years designing equipment for the U.S. Navy through government contractors. And I was very content at being an inventor. And I had developed this technology for the crew of Minisub and thought, okay, well, I'll just try to find a company that might want to market it and sell it. And I'll stay at home in my lab and continue to invent things. But God had other plans for me, as it turns out. So in 2002, I spent 2 years doing clinical studies, trying to figure out how to do the manufacturing on the product. And then, of course, how are we going to go about and market it? And that's when the circumstances led me to network marketing. And in late 2004, we set up the network marketing business. And it's been absolutely incredible ever since.
So tell me something. How do you go from we're not going into network marketing to this is the place for us and, you know, passionately, you know, I guess pursuing that path for the company.
Yeah. You know, I came as an outsider from this industry and was looking at going through retail stores like General Nutrition Center, marketing on TV and radio and those types of channels. The internet wasn't really so much of a consideration back then. And as the circumstances would have it, I met someone that was interested in investing in the company, and he knew a doctor, and then that doctor knew another doctor, and then that doctor got me to coach Richard Quick at Stanford University, a six-time U.S. Olympic coach. And when I looked at the path that I had taken to build awareness in the company and in the technology, it happened all through networking. So when the opportunity came up to do the distribution of the product, at that point, it really made sense to set up a company to market through direct selling.
And David, I think that's amazing. And, you know, this is not an uncommon story that the networks within this industry really help a company go from an idea of a conception through to becoming a worldwide phenomenon. And it's just proof in the pudding that word of mouth and networking and connections are just so, so important for marketing. So I love that you decided that this industry was the industry for you, but you're also a really fascinating human being and individual. The fact that you've come from such a scientific background, you came from submarines. I mean, this is just, when we first chatted, I thought this is amazing. What an incredible backstory. Do you want to just, because we want to get to know David as well, can you share a quick little fun fact about you with our audience? David Schmidt. The person.
Let's see. I've wanted to be an inventor since I was about 7 or 8 years old, and but I could never figure out really how to do that as a career. And at one point in my life, I was living down in the Atlanta, Georgia area, and I joined an inventors club. And a fun little fact was that I got an award for finding a way to make cement out of seawater. And then from that invention, I had a group of guys approach me and ask what other kind of inventions that I had and what I'd be interested in setting up a company to market some of these things. And then eventually I took one of my inventions, which was a new type of battery, and we set up a company to market that and eventually ended up at companies like General Dynamics and Newport News Shipbuilding, wow, taking these new technologies into submarines, among many other things.
That's amazing. How old were you at this time?
Well, let's see. I'm really going to date myself. I was in my 30s at the point. So I just turned 61 this year. So it feels like a lifetime ago.
Wow. Well, that's amazing. It just goes to show that just surround yourself with like-minded people and amazing things can happen, right?
That's right.
I love it. So, David, one of the things that we also got to chat about, and the thing that really drew me to you in particular, was that you don't hide that business has ups and downs. And, you know, whilst LifeWave is doing incredible things right now and you're about to have, you know, your biggest year of growth yet, you've also been through some challenges. And you made the comment to me that, you know, it's important to you that you share some of these challenges so that others maybe don't necessarily need to go through them, or that they understand that, you know, it is part of business, and to hang in there and to be resilient and to continue persisting. What have some of those challenges looked like for you? Would you be willing to share any of that with our listeners today?
Well, there's going to be challenges on a day-to-day basis for sure. What I found is that this comes in waves, it comes in cycles, and there'll be periods when there's complete peace and everything is working great, and then other times when it just seems like you're encountering a tremendous amount of resistance. And challenges to me are opportunities. They're opportunities to grow, to learn, to improve upon the way that you're doing things. And if you don't rise to the occasion and overcome these challenges, then the second time around, they tend to be a lot more difficult and a lot more painful. And in our particular case, two of the challenges that we had where we eventually emerged as a stronger company was we came very close to bankruptcy twice. Once, and both situations were completely outside of our control. The first time was in 2006, where we were the victims of a credit card fraud. And the second time was in 2016, almost 10 years to the month, where we were the victims of a computer system that had crashed and was not working properly. So we couldn't take orders for many, many weeks. So both of these events crippled the company, but we were able to stay with it, bounce back. And now, of course, we're in the top 100 largest network marketing companies in the world. So it really goes to show that when you have challenges, especially bad ones, it doesn't mean that it's the end. It's an opportunity to really learn a lot about yourself, your desire to be part of a goal and something bigger, your relationship with God and prayer, and looking to overcome the challenge and be stronger as a result.
So, David, in these cases, you know, you've made the comment that both of these situations were out of your control. What do you do to survive through these sorts of things? I mean, you said that you were almost bankrupted. You know, how would you encourage other people to hang in there when you can't see a way out, when you're not sure, you know, if this is, if you should really even continue pushing forward? You know, what's your advice in that space? Because I think sometimes, whether a business is big or small, and we're all going through those challenges, I think sometimes people are sitting there going, why should I keep doing this? You know, what's your advice in that space?
Well, first, there's a lot of lessons, I think, to be learned here, and a number of things that helped to get me through these challenges. One of them, and this is going to sound counterintuitive, but in having a life of prayer, having a relationship with God, it's important to give thanks for what you do have in your life. And when the walls are kind of crashing down, it's difficult to be thankful, but it's a very, very important part of life and to be appreciative, even when things are difficult. Next, it gives you an opportunity to evaluate, is this really what I want out of my life? Because sometimes, you know, one door will close and then another one will open. And with respect to LifeWave, this has been my dream to bring this technology to the world to help people that are in need. And so when things got really difficult, it reaffirmed my desire to stay dedicated to this goal, no matter how difficult it was. And, you know, you buckle up, you work hard, you create a plan, and you have to cut expenses and really watch and evaluate what it is that you're doing. And then eventually, once you get your situation stabilized, you come up with a strategy. What exactly is it that you're going to do to dig your way out of this? And in our particular case, we tried many different things, and there were some things that worked and things that didn't, but we never stopped trying.
Yeah, wow. You know, the first thing that you said there actually reminds me of one of my favorite quotes, and this I've got written on my bedroom wall, and that is that when you're singing about the fruit in the vineyard, you're not focusing on the thorns and the weeds. And that's my daily reminder, because it's so true. You know, we've all got a negative bias, and we like to focus on the things that are going wrong in our lives. But when you stop and you look at even the little wins and the things that are going well, the things that you have, it's amazing how much we gloss over when we're focusing on what's not going so well. So I think that's a really great piece of advice. I also want to come back a little step here, because you made a little comment before and you said that, you know, we have little challenges every day, and sometimes when we're not learning from those, they come back and they, you know, can come back as bigger challenges. I like to call this the feather, the brick, the Mack truck. Do you think that in your case, those two almost bankruptcy incidents were things that you know, looking back, you were sort of getting some feathers and bricks prior, or do you think that they were simply just really big challenges?
Well, that's an interesting way to look at it, because I would say that in the case of the first incident, what was happening was there was an individual that was purchasing stolen credit card data, and they were populating positions. And basically, this was a scheme to trigger the system so this person could earn commissions using the stolen credit card data. And I would say if any good came from that is that we learned how to implement systems, both automated and manual, to detect these type of frauds. So we had a number of events after that occurred where people tried something similar, but we had systems set up to detect it, so it didn't happen again. So I would probably say that I'm grateful it happened when it did, because it was able to prevent something larger from happening in the future.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. And there's always, you know, with any of these challenges, there's a benefit to it, right? There's always something that comes out of it. And like you said, that you either grow through it and you gain something from it, or you learn something, or in this case, it's made the company stronger. You know, one of the things that you spoke to me about the other day, I asked you what you attributed your company growth to. And one of the things that you said was, you always look 10 years ahead. Now, that's amazing. I've not spoken to many people who have got that much insight to always be planning that 10 years ahead. Where did that come from, and have you always been doing that? Was that just intuitive from you, or is that something that you learned to do, and how? You know, there's a lot of questions here, but how do you plan 10 years ahead?
Yeah. So I think the first thing is I want to give credit where credit is due and thank all of the amazing leaders that are in the company, because without our leaders, without our brand partners, nothing happens. So our growth is a direct result of them being out there every day, promoting the vision of the company and the products. So that would be number one on my list. But in terms of looking towards the future, I would say this is just something which makes great business sense, because if you want to be a leader and you really want to be ahead of the curve, you have to be thinking about, well, exactly what will society look like 10 years or 50 years from now? So I think this has been something rather normal for me, which I'm very grateful for. But it's certainly something that any management team can be thinking about. We're often so very caught up in what's going on day to day and thinking, well, you know, where do we want to be 6 or 8 months from now? We should really be thinking, is there something out there that is going to displace us in 2 or 3 years and make us irrelevant? And what type of trends will we see in the world over the next 5, 10, 20 years? So as an example, going back 3 years, I set up a project to develop a new type of drone technology. And because I saw, well, coming down the road, 5 years, 10 years, drones will be an everyday part of life. And our products will be delivered by drones. So maybe we can create some new technology. So eventually, our brand partners can get delivery of our products within an hour by a drone. And that can be something that we do.
Yeah. I love this. Okay. So where is this technology invention now? I mean, that was 3 years ago, David.
Yeah. Well, a funny thing happened in the lab. I started this project with my son. It was started very humble beginnings, just to be a father-son project. And we ended up creating an entirely new method of generating power on drones. And we're getting ready to break the world record on drone flight. So,
wow.
Yeah, we have Lockheed currently holds the record at 39 and a half hours. And our drone is going to be able to exceed 40 hours of flight time. So we've had meetings with the Red Cross and a number of other organizations. We basically want to use this technology for humanitarian efforts, as well as some other applications eventually within LifeWave.
Wow, that's really cool. I really would love to be a fly on the wall in your lab, I think. That sounds like a lot of fun.
You might regret I've that.
Yeah, I would regret that, would I? We don't like flies in the lab, he says.
Right.
So I've got to ask, have you had any crazy inventions that just haven't panned out, ideas that you had that just, I mean, surely you have. You've got to share with us, there's got to be a fun story in there somewhere.
Yeah, I would say that we have, like at any one time, we will have 20 projects, 30 projects that are going. And they're not all intended to be a product that ends up at the market. The intention is to do the experiment, to learn, and, you know, to see what comes from it. So I would say that many of the projects and the inventions, they actually do work. I guess one of them that's kind of fun is I invented a new type of nanotechnology foam. It's very lightweight and very, very strong. And 2 years ago, I made nanotechnology frisbees out of them, and I gave them to a group of our leaders that were on an advisory board as a gift. So that was a fun thing that we did. That was a fun thing that we did. Yeah.
I love it. Like walking through your home, there would be all sorts of crazy fun things going on in your home that just, you know, you can't see anywhere else. So it sounds like a fun family environment, that's for sure.
Yeah, you know, I would say for many years, one of the things which was fairly harmless that I would experiment with in the house is water. New methods of processing water. Although back in my 30s, I would do experiments in the garage, and I had a few of them that didn't go so well. They caught fire, and fortunately, no one was hurt in the process. Yeah, but you know, you gotta break a few eggs to make an omelet, as they say.
So water becomes much safer in the long run to play with in
the
home.
Water is much safer and, as it turns out, much more interesting.
I love it. Now, I've got to ask, though, I mean, you obviously come from a background of being an inventor, which means that, you know, you're able to look 10 years ahead as far as what's the next invention, what's the next product. Is this thinking 10 years ahead process still relevant to, say, a solopreneur, maybe a leader or someone in direct selling who's growing their own business within a company? How does this apply to that individual?
Yeah, I would say for anyone that's a business owner, regardless of what you're doing, if you're not thinking what will the world look like in 5 years, 10 years, even 20 years, then you're missing an enormous opportunity. And you're mm-hmm. also taking a risk by saying, okay, this is my product today. And you're making an assumption that it's going to be relevant 5 or 10 years from now. And that may not be the case. So for example, in the field of nutrition, what I would say is the way that we think about vitamins and minerals today is going to be very different in the future, the way that people select what type of nutrition that they're using. We'll think much more about nutrition as information systems, and how are these nutrients affecting the energy generating process of the body, the communication systems, and we'll select supplements on that basis. So, I think that would probably be one example. But for anyone that owns a company, if you're not thinking ahead, it's you're really saying my product's going to be around forever, and mm-hmm. I don't need to keep innovating, and that's a huge mistake.
Yeah. And so, you know, that's a really good point. I think a distributor in the field should potentially also be looking ahead at your corporate team, at your, you know, I guess your founder or your development team, and be asking the question, what's coming, as much as what are we dealing with right now? Because you, I mean, they hold the ticket to, you know, the future of the relevance of your products. But talking about what's in our control and what's not in our control, and speaking into the brand partners now for a moment, what are some of the steps that people could take that are in their control to be future planning their business? So let's just say I don't get to control the products that the company I work with create, but as a brand partner, are there some things that I can do to future plan my part of the business?
Yeah, I would definitely say so, especially now with the advent of AI. If a brand partner is not staying up on what's happening in some fairly good detail, they risk falling behind. Now, the great thing about our industry is that it's always going to be about building personal relationships, face-to-face selling. I don't think, and I certainly hope, that that element of our industry ever goes away. But there are some better and more efficient ways that brand partners can make contacts with other people, and certainly to leverage new systems like AI. So if I were a brand partner, what I would be looking at, what are the most efficient ways of reaching people through social media, through the internet? How can I streamline my business with AI and take advantage of those things? So that's certainly all within an individual's control.
Yeah, I love that. That's really some really valid points there. And in fact, one of the things that we've really started doing is showing some strategies to people. And we've done a couple of podcasts on this and incorporated AI now into our training to help people better understand their audience, but also to do things like gap analysis and competitor analysis and look at the opportunities that you might be missing. And I think there's an assumption that AI, when it comes to social media, is really just good for creating content. And that'd probably be the last thing I would use it for. So it's really interesting, you know, the world that we're in right now and the tools that we have at our fingertips and the capability of those tools. So I think that's a really great point that you bring up. So, David, I want to chat health for a little moment because you and I are both very passionate about this topic, and I am very fascinated by much of the research that I think is coming to light now and being made much more publicly accessible, I think, in the last few years. I'm really interested, you know, you're passionate not just about the longevity of life, but also the quality of life. How much do you believe our health is in our control versus the hand we were dealt with when we were born and placed on this earth?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And the answer that I might give you today might be different several years from now, depending on how things happen. So on the one hand, the type of things that are outside of our control is the air that we breathe has contaminants in it. Most of the food that we consume, hopefully we're avoiding genetically modified foods, but there's going to be heavy metals, pesticides that work their way into the food chain, hormones that are undesirable, xenoestrogens from plastics and so forth. So there's going to be these external factors. However, there are a tremendous number of things that we can do to take control of our health. And that really is, to me, the exciting part, that we don't have to be a victim of our genetics or our circumstances. There's things that we can do to turn things around. And many of these things are simple and some of these things are free. So, for example, we now know today through clinical research that exercise, intense exercise, is going to be far more powerful at reversing cardiovascular disease than any pharmaceutical drug, many times more effective. Getting enough rest, drinking enough clean water, having a healthy diet, all the basics that people already know. But when we look beyond that, at what type of technology is available, The field that we study, or the fields that we study, which would be light therapy and pulsed electromagnetic field therapy, offer a tremendous number of opportunities at slowing down and even reversing many of the signs and the symptoms of aging. So the type of areas that we look at in our research is to study organisms that don't age. These would be things like planaria, hydractinia, tardigrades. In our lab internally, we focused a lot on ants and on lobsters. And what we find with lobsters especially is that they use a system of light communication that prevents their cells from ever breaking down. So when their cells divide, they divide as young, healthy cells. And what we've looked to do is take that information that we've learned in our research and create technology so we can apply this to human beings. And we've just finished up three human clinical studies now after about six years of research in this area. And I'm extraordinarily excited about the potential of this technology.
Wow. So I'm going to ask what may seem a dumb question here, and possibly some of our listeners already know the answer to this, but are you telling me that lobsters don't age?
There are species on the planet today that do not age. Lobsters is one of them. And actually, lobsters are interesting in the sense that they actually get stronger as they age instead of more frail. And the reasons why a lobster would die, which are kind of self-evident, is that they're eaten by a predator. They can become sick, or they outgrow the size of their shell. Other than that, they would not age and they wouldn't die. Tardigrades, planaria, and hydractinia are very similar in that regard, in that they can continue to perpetuate and live on and not show any visible signs of aging.
So this goes the same for ants. If an ant was not trodden on or killed through some external force, it would live forever?
Ants are actually a special case. So normally ants will age, but there is one specific species of ant called the temnothorax. And this ant, you would say the queen ant will live about 5 to 6 times longer than a worker ant. However, the worker ant can be infected by a parasite. Now, normally we would think of this as being a bad thing, but in this case, nature has built in a symbiotic mechanism. And what happens is the parasite changes some of the gene expression in the ant. So the ant will overproduce an enzyme, and this enzyme causes the ant to increase its energy production, and in the process, the ant will not age until the very end of its life. But this parasite gives the ant an increase of about 5 to 6 times its normal lifespan. So imagine, if human beings were able to apply that and live to be 500 to 600 years old, but not age until the very end of their lives, that would be, yeah, a pretty amazing thing. So we see this as biologically possible for human beings.
Wow. This is amazing. And actually, one of the questions I asked you the other day, I'm going to repeat it here because you and I both are Christian. I know many of our listeners are as well. And not that in any way this is an opportunity to preach. This is simply a question I wanted to ask because, if you, whether or not you're a Christian or not, if you've read the Bible, you know that there was a point in the Bible where God said, because in the First Testament, people lived up to 900 plus years old. And then there was a point where with the flood where God said, no longer will people live past 120 years of age. Now, I had to ask the question, David, because you and I both are Christians, and so we read the Bible and follow the Bible. And one of the things that I wanted to know was if you're your research and your inventions and the scientific work that you're doing is aimed towards extending life. My question was, if God doesn't intend for us to live past 120 years, you know, what's your thoughts around that?
Yeah, I think my thought would be whatever God's will is, I'm happy with that. And I want to follow God's will. And so, you know, when we're looking back at the story of creation, the story of Noah, we can see what happened. And the story is quite fascinating because if we take it literally, it meant that there were angels essentially that came down to earth and they had relations with earth women and they created a race of giants called the Nephilim. And there was evil upon the earth. So God said, okay, look, I've had enough of this. There's just one person and his family that I find without fault. Noah's blood and his son's blood were pure. And so Noah then was selected to be saved so the Nephilim could be wiped out. And then, of course, as we know, God said, yeah, the lifespan is going to be limited to 120. So the circumstances today, you know, are quite different. I don't know what God's will is in this matter. However, if we could live, let's say, to be a maximum of 120, but we didn't age until the very end of our lives, that would be incredible. We would have more productive lives. We wouldn't have disease or be as susceptible to disease. The cost of healthcare and health insurance would drop dramatically. And of course, we could use that money to do other great things in the world. So I suppose... Yep. You know, we'll find out in time what's really going to be possible. Yeah. But if we don't hit a speed limit at 120, then there's really no reason for people to age at all.
Yeah, so it brings up a really good point, and it comes back to that quality of life for longer. And I think a lot of people have got a fear of the last part of life, not because I'm going to die soon, but what's my life quality going to look like in those last 10, 20 years? So if we can improve that through things we can control, then, you know, we live a much longer quality life. And I think that's a really amazing thing to be aiming towards. For those people who are listening to this going, well, that sounds wonderful, but I'm in, you know, at the mercy of the people like the Davids of this world that are doing the scientific research and it's out of my control. You know, I want to come back again to what's in our control. You know, a lot of people will talk about the hand they were dealt as far as genetically I'm dispositioned to this, or genetically this is what I was born with and therefore I can't have those wonderful things. I want to just quickly ask, what are some of the things that people can control that are going to improve their quality of life right now? And I know that there's a lot that you can pay for, but there's also a lot that you can do that's in within reach that's not going to cost you any or much extra to do. There might be a little bit of extra expense, especially, you know, if you're going organic, for example, and you're wanting to invest in good filtered water and et cetera. But what are some of the things that you would say are absolute must that are within our control right now that are going to improve our quality of life no matter where we are on the planet and what we were dealt with genetically?
Yeah. So if we had about an hour or two, I would love to answer that question.
So we need to come back and do this another interview.
I'd be happy to. If we just focused on that one thing, we definitely could speak for about an hour or two on that. There's so many things. So I would say first as a start, one thing that I would ask people to think about to get in a very narrow focus on this subject is the health of the way their body produces energy. And if they just focus in on that one thing, there's going to be a tremendous number of benefits. Every area of their life is going to improve. So in biology, of course, in the cell, that area of the cell is called the mitochondria. And by the time that people reach age 50, they experience what's called mitochondrial dysfunction. The amount of energy that the mitochondria produces decreases, and we start to shift to producing more energy from carbohydrates than fats, and people start to gain weight and slow down and age in the process. So there's a tremendous number of things that people can do to improve the health of their mitochondria beyond some of the basics. So for example, work that was done by Bruce Ames here in the US showed that supplementing with alpha-lipoic acid and acetyl-L-carnitine, those two things could start to improve the function of the mitochondria, and in many cells in the body, restore them to more youthful cells. Another thing that we can do is to love one another. Now, this is going to sound like some New Age or 1960s hippies things, and
we're going woo-woo like here.
I often like to say that Jesus was really the first anti-aging scientist when he's saying, love others as I have loved you. But what's incredible is that when we love, we raise a hormone in our body called oxytocin. Now, I know you as a mom have experienced this, because when you give birth, then the mom releases oxytocin as a method of bonding with the child. When people fall in love, their levels of oxytocin go up. Well, remarkably, when we live in a state of love, there's been experiments to show that when we treat old muscle tissue, let's say someone in their 80s, with oxytocin, the cells revert to younger, healthier cells. They look like cells that are 25 or 30 years old. There's another enormous benefit of living in a state of truly loving one another. And this is that it reduces the stress in the body and will reduce inflammatory stress and oxidative stress. And as a result, we're less susceptible to the types of disease like arthritis, cancer, heart disease that kill people. So, you know, those are just two very simple examples. But what I would say is that through a combination of healthy diet, exercise, proper nutrition, stress management, other technologies like light therapy, 850 nanometer light, for example, will stimulate muscle tissue, stimulate the mitochondria and the detox process in the body. These type of approaches and technologies have an absolutely dramatic effect on quality of life, and in most cases can even reverse someone's physical age.
Wow. Now, I've got to ask, because I've noticed this. I mean, infrared saunas and ice baths have become a really big part of that process as well of healthy living. And, you know, in fact, we did an ice bath challenge within one of our Facebook challenges just a week ago, where we were challenging people to step outside of their comfort zone and try new things on social media, that we were sharing with them some strategies to do. And we decided to live by example and push ourselves outside of our comfort zone and do an ice bath challenge live for this group of people. It was a lot of fun. But one of the things I've been really fascinated by is this process of putting our body through certain elements of stress in order to improve our quality of health. And one of the things that I've noticed is in infrared saunas, many of them have got this light therapy you speak of, and there's all sorts of different colored lights. And this confuses me because I don't understand much about it, but I noticed that some of them have got different colors that you can set your infrared sauna room too. What is the purpose of the different colors, and why would you have a choice of which colors to use? And this side of it really fascinates me, because I know that there's a lot of evidence that light therapy is very powerful, but for someone like me who's got not a clue, how would you explain that?
So there are, to your point, there are different wavelengths, and with each wavelength there's a different benefit. So there's first the far infrared saunas, and on the far infrared, that's going to be between 5 micron and 15 micron. So this would be in the range of what we would normally associate with body heat. So this type of therapy is going to be very good for relaxation, for stress reduction, and also for detoxification. And if someone is looking for an infrared sauna, I would recommend that they find one that has very low EMF. Some of the products on the market, they produce an electromagnetic field, and this is something that you don't want to have near your body. So look for a far infrared sauna that has low EMF. Another type of infrared is what we would call the near infrared. And these are going to be wavelengths, and again, as an example, 850 nanometers. And those wavelengths are important because they'll turn on and improve mitochondrial function. And one interesting thing I found through my research in the Bible is that if we first, the Bible is truly the inspired word of God. And there are these incredible numerical codes in the Bible. So if we took the phrase tree of life and we converted that into the original Hebrew, and each letter in Hebrew is associated with a number. So if we took tree of life and we converted those letters over into a numerical value, we come up with the number 159. And then if we took 159 and we treat it as a frequency and we convert it over into its equivalent wavelength, we come up with a number of 857. And that happens to be exactly the wavelength that we would use to turn on the mitochondria and reverse aging. So that's not an accident or a coincidence that that information is in the Bible. But in any case, that would be another wavelength that people could use. And then finally, in the visible spectra, there might be some people that are interested in a surgery-free facelift and reducing the appearance of lines and wrinkles. Well, that would be
everyone. Yeah, everyone.
That would be around 600. Yeah, that would be around 660 nanometers. And what's interesting is even the TGA and in your country and the FDA here in the United States recognize that wavelength of light as a method for improving the quality of skin and increasing collagen production. So this is to say that the body works on a code, and each wavelength of light turns on a different system in the body.
Wow. Okay. I feel like we've just opened up a massive can of worms that is probably a whole nother conversation and probably got the intrigue of everyone listening, because it certainly got me very intrigued. And this sort of stuff really fascinates me. I think it's a lot of fun to talk about and learn about what we can do, but this amazing research that I think is, I know that a lot of this has been happening for many, many years, but I just feel like the things that are becoming, the knowledge that's becoming publicly accessible, is it just my imagination, or in the last 3 or 4 years, has there just been an explosion of information about health that I think is becoming so much more publicly accessible? Is that just me, or has there been a big shift in this space?
Huge, absolutely huge shift. And now with AI, and this is only going to continue to grow. So, you know, it used to be that knowledge would double once every 10 years, then 5, then 2, then 1. Mm-hmm. And now really we're seeing knowledge increase at a staggering rate. So it really pays to keep on top as much as possible of some of these new developments and take advantage of what technologies exist today that we can use to support our overall health and wellness.
David, I've got to ask this though. You know, when you've got the people like me who are sitting here going, this makes sense, this sounds amazing, but the knowledge that we take on, really we're at the mercy of those people who are creating this or who are doing this research. How do we filter through what is taking advantage and what's actually going to help me? Because you and I both know that there are so many, I mean, even just talking about the light and the saunas, I mean, we know that a sauna, an infrared sauna, is powerful, but I didn't know prior to speaking to you that I need to check on EMF the electromagnetic field. Now, how do we discern as everyday people who are not scientists, what's going to help me and what's not? And, you know, what is really just taking me and my wallet for a ride?
Yeah, you know, it's a fascinating question because at the end of the day, we can only do the best that we can. I would say a good starting point is first to look to see whether or not a company has clinical studies to verify that their products work and their products are safe. So that would be really a good starting point. And then I would say also look inside yourself and intuitively say, well, does this make sense as far as what they're saying? Is there any proof to show that what they're saying is scientifically valid or not? And then, you know, scientific ideas, these things, you know, certainly change over time. Just because something is a trend, I wouldn't necessarily believe it. Like, so back in the 50s, medical doctors used to say that smoking was not only safe, but actually good for you. And of course, you know, now we know that they were being paid by the tobacco companies and, and smoking causes cancer.
Wasn't there a point that, I don't know if it was cocaine or heroin was, it might've been heroin was actually used as particularly amongst females, it was like a healthy thing to be doing for a short period of time there until they realized, oh my goodness, probably not so good.
Yeah, I think this is, you know, kind of the way that life is and that we need to be able to discern for ourselves, you know, inherently whether or not something makes sense. And, you know, we just use the information that we have at the time and make the best decisions that we can. But I'd say with regards to the products that are on the market, you know, look at the company, look at the clinical studies, look at independent research, and then make it make the best decision that you can.
Yeah. There's a lot to be said for our intuition and our that gut instinct that we talk about that I think, you know, one of the things I used to say as a young mum, I realized probably after the first 12 months of life of my first son that when you first have a baby, you think, I don't know what I'm doing. I have no idea. I'm not experienced at this. So I'm going to listen to the wisdom of all the people around me. And I remember watching myself and then looking back on this process. And I realized that every step along the way, anything I questioned, so it might have been, you know, trying to wean or trying to, you know, starting food or trying to get him to sleep better. I would go to everyone around me and try everything everyone else said before I eventually was left with no option but to do the one thing that I intuitively knew to do at the start. And I said, you know, in my head, I would go, I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm going to do what everyone else says that it's got more experience. It was always the one thing I should have started with, which was my intuition and my gut feel. Whether or not it made sense, I knew what to do even when I thought I didn't. I love the Tony Robbins quote, when you don't know, you know. It's so true. And, you know, it's like that with our health too. When you don't know, you know. When you're asking the question, what should I do? Stop and go inside and listen intuitively what your body is telling you, because whilst you may need outside influence, and again, this so many things I can look back on and go, I did everything everyone else told me to do. Wasn't until I had no choice that I went back and did the one thing I knew I should have done. And that was the thing that worked. Which is really interesting because now that I think about it, you're a scientist and I feel like that sort of logic doesn't probably work so well in the scientific world, right? You don't listen to intuition and gut, you listen to science.
No, actually that's, you know, part science is really about making observations. And, so some of the observations we can make is that with people's intuition, there is a, guiding inner intelligence that are telling people to do things a certain way. So for example, intuitively, a mother knows how to hold their child so that the child will feel, warmth and love and safety. And as it turns out, we have a bioelectric and biomagnetic field around the body. So we'll have we'll have a positive potential in our palm, and we'll have a negative potential on the back of the hand. And a mom will place their hands around a baby in a specific way to complement that child's energetic field, to strengthen it and nurture it.
Wow.
So this doesn't come through any type of scientific study. It all comes through intuition.
Wow. Well, there you go. So I think that's a great takeaway and a great spot for us to spot switch right now to my favorite questions. But I love that we've just heard from an incredible scientist that intuition is still such a powerful thing, and you absolutely should be trusting it. So I think that's amazing. I've got to ask, David, I'm really fascinated by these questions for you in particular. The first one is, what's your favorite book for us to add to our accelerator book list?
Yeah, I would say that's a really tough one because I read many, but actually I get fixated on the book of Genesis, and I think I could probably read the book of Genesis my entire life and never understand all of its secrets. Even just in the very first sentence of the book of Genesis, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, contains more information than people realize. But when you break down those words into numbers, you begin to see mathematical codes take place. So I would say that there is such incredible wisdom, incredible knowledge in the Bible that I'd have to put it at the very top of my list.
Wow. Well, I think almost everyone has a copy of that book probably somewhere very nearby. So that's great. And I think I will look at Genesis a very different way now, having had this conversation with you. And I want to go back and revisit some of these stories that we've spoken about today. It's just fascinating. So, David, if you could have any superpower, what would that be and why?
Let's see. I think, if I could have any superpower, I would probably want to be Tony Stark, because his superpower is his mind as an inventor, and he's able to invent different types of armor that has different powers, and he uses that to help people. So I think that's a pretty cool superpower.
That is a really cool superpower. So if you do see an Iron Man floating around in real life, we'll know who it is behind that suit.
I'm working on it.
I don't question that. I'm sure this is something you may be able to create in your lifetime. So I look forward to hearing how that goes. Probably going into your lab, I'm sure there's some kind of an Iron Man-esque suit sitting in there somewhere.
That might be hidden in there somewhere. Might be.
And David, your favorite quote?
I would say I really like the quote from Ralph Waldo Emerson. I'll get as close as I can with it, but what lies behind you and what lies before you pales to insignificance as compared to what lies within you. And this just encapsulates this idea that we face challenges in the past. We're going to face challenges again, but we have this inner strength and we can overcome these challenges and become better people. We can grow if we follow that inner strength.
Oh, I love that. That's a really good one. I'm going to add that one to my quote wall. I think that's a good one to remind ourselves of, especially when going through those business challenges that we talked about earlier, and those ups and downs and highs and lows and difficulties along the way. And one of the things that I'll say to our members on a daily basis is, you have everything you need within you and around you now. The question is whether or not you're going to pick those tools up and you're going to use them, but you've already got them. You've already got everything you need.
Absolutely.
And I think that quote reinstills that. So thank you. The very last question I've got for you, David, is this. If you could go back in time and you could say one thing to your past self, what would that be?
Well, that's a tough one because, you know, my life worked out pretty well. And if I went back in time, then you end up in a time paradox and I might say something to myself that would alter the future. So
I really, stand by a true scientist. I love that. And you can't mess with the past.
No, I don't want to create a nasty branch reality. So I think what I would say to my past self without screwing up the timeline is, everything's going to be okay. Trust God, lead a life of prayer, love others, be the best person that you can be. And do as much good in the world as you can, because ultimately that's why we're here. If we look at how fragile life is, that what we should be doing is taking care of those that are less fortunate. We should be helping people in need, helping to heal others, provide them with food, clothing, and shelter, and be a race of beings that genuinely care for one another. And I like to imagine that there is a future ahead where there is no war, no poverty, no hunger, no sickness. And it's because we're able to evolve to that point. So I remain hopeful that that's a possibility.
I think with people like you in the world, David, it's a very real possibility. And thank you so, so much for so passionately doing what you do and showing up in the world, and for honoring us today with your time and your knowledge as well. Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure chatting with you.
Thank you, Sam. Pleasure's mine.
So thank you again, of course, to our amazing listeners. I hope you've really enjoyed listening to this episode. I certainly feel very honored that I get to take this seat and hear from you directly, David, and to pass this knowledge and information on to our amazing listeners. So thank you, everyone, for tuning on in, and we'll see you again on the podcast next week. God bless, and bye for now. If you love this video and you would love more help to improve your direct selling business on social media, then click on the link to join our Facebook group. I look forward to seeing you in there.